Great, thank you. It's just about time to hand off to my colleague Susan, who's going to start taking the audience's questions. Before we do that, I just wanted to mention that everyone is here because they, I think, are concerned about the change in climate and they want to know more about it. And we obviously think it's important, and that's why we're hosting this event. It is also one of those things that, costs money to cover. And it's also, as someone had mentioned, sexy science. It's not one of those topics for which there's a giant audience interest all the time, like crime or politics. So it's one of those important things we want to cover. So we are going to, if you care about climate coverage and seeing more of it from your local paper, which you consider if you're not a subscriber already, to subscribe. And we have a code tonight to give you $10 off an annual subscription for you or someone else as a gift. And it's good through the end of the month. That code is Climate10. So you can consider that to be a vote for more climate coverage if you use that. And with that, I'm going to hand it off to Susan. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Dan. It's been a really good far-ranging conversation. And we've obviously talked a lot about the different species that are commercially harvested currently in Maine, but our audience had a lot of questions about other species as well. And one question was, what about invasive species? We already see like the Asian shore crab and other species that are out competing our native ocean wildlife. Are there likely to be other threats from invasive species? And is that also perhaps an opportunity? I know folks are trying to figure out what we can do with green crabs and things. So, is there also an opportunity to start to harvest and market some of those invasive species?
Well, I can say a few words about a couple of the invasive species and green crab and Asian shore crab, of course, were mentioned. And really, the green crab has a long history along the New England coast and has even moved into Atlantic Canada as well, but over the past 100 some years. So it's been around a while. But there's a new effort to try to make that a viable fishery, given the booms boom in the numbers we've seen. And so I know that Maine Sea Grant and other extension efforts along the coast have been exploring recipes and ways to use green crabs. As for the Asian shore crab, that is one species that established a foothold in southern New England, and amazingly has competitively excluded green crabs from some of the shores of Connecticut, but it's advancing northward, and we definitely see it here on the mid coast of Maine. In the shallow subtidal and mostly intertidal. What kinds of threats and opportunities it'll create or remain to be seen, I think. And I'll leave it at that.
I'm glad that we've talked about aquaculture because we had a lot of audience questions about opportunities through aquaculture. But one thing we didn't talk about is seaweed farming. And we have a question whether, farming seaweed on a large scale, can that have some positive effects on warming and acidification?
Not necessarily on warming. I don't think it really changes that, but it definitely changes the carbonate chemistry for the better. Basically, anything that is any plant, it takes carbon dioxide out of the water, and it's that carbon dioxide coming in from the atmosphere, coming in with excess runoff. It's that carbon dioxide that lowers the pH and makes it harder for organisms that make their shells out of calcium carbonate to make their shells. So growing seaweed is really environmentally beneficial, and it's also really nutritious, and it grows fast, So I would like to encourage anybody who wants to put a farm around my oyster farm to do so.
Bill, can you talk a little bit more about how acidification is affecting your farm and shellfish aquaculture generally?
Sure. In 2009, I would say we hit a tipping point, and it was a record warm winter. It happened to be the winter that I think MSX, the oyster disease, sort of took hold. But the other consequence of that winter was that we were having terrible problems producing larvae in our hatchery. And it turns out that it was because of ocean acidification or coastal acidification, and which is actually a really complex problem. It's not just, the main driver globally is having excess carbon dioxide dissolving into the oceans and forming carbonic acid and changing the pH or acidity of the ocean water. But it also is affected, if you think about rain and the low pH and the acidity of rain, it's actually less than neutral, so it is acidic. When you get these big, heavy frequent storms with heavy runoff, all that fresh water that comes into estuaries like the Damariscotta River also lower the pH and cause problems. And as a result of that, we now have to essentially, it's like giving Tums to our larval cultures. We buffer the water that we grow the larvae in so that they grow normally and survive well. Fortunately, so far, we've only seen the really bad effects of that in a closed system in a hatchery kind of environment. We have not documented that out in the environment. My feeling is that will become a problem at some point. We have actually looked very closely at whether the juvenile oysters that we transfer out into the environment from the hatchery to see whether those are being affected by the carbonate chemistry. And so far, we think we do see a little bit of effect, but it's not a major problem for us. Yes, this is going to be a growing problem. There's no question about it. But there are things in the toolbox that we can pull out and make use of, such as seaweed farming, such as growing the shellfish past or longer on land so that they're larger when they go out into the environment. I think that's one of the things that aquaculture certainly is a little bit vulnerable to this thing, but it also has some ways that unlike a wild fishery, we can adapt.